Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots nonprofit radio station in Laguna Beach from anywhere in the world on KX93.5.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. Right now, here's the Importance of Being podcast on KX93.5.
What can I say? Did I steal you away from the life that you thought you would lead? All days can be strange, but then August is dangerous, handing your heart to the heat. Quiet line, I hope you can love me a long time. I hope you can see me through. I find the light in your eyes to be bright. It started out west in some mountain state. The same, you can't argue with this little clock. And you said you were fine, but a ship is betrayed by its ensign. A good distance away, it will still shine. Wait in the wind to be seen.
a favor, son, won't you stay and keep Anna Lee company?
Take a load off Fanny. Take a load off Bree. Take a load off Fanny.
And you put the load right on. He said, I will fix your rat if you take Jack, my dog. I said, wait a minute, Chester, you know I'm a peaceful man. He said, that's okay, boy, won't you feed him when you can?
Yeah, take a load off Fanny, take a load.
Good morning. This is KX93.5. You're listening to the Importance of Being show. Happy Saturday, everyone. You know, we do this show live every Saturday morning from 8 to 9, and I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. And today I am happy to have as my guest to talk about a timely and relevant topic, William Crosby. And we're going to be talking about workplace harassment. So, hi, Bill.
Hi, Ernest. Good to see you.
Glad to be here. Oh, glad to have you. So, you are an attorney.
Yes.
And you specialize in workplace legal issues around the workplace.
That's correct. I have for about 35 years.
Okay. And so, obviously, there's been an aspect of workplace harassment that's been in the news quite a bit, in a lot of heads rolling, so to speak. But let's maybe pull back a little bit and understand the framework of the law in the workplace. What laws or what are the rules?
Okay, well, in the United States, unlike the rest of the virtually all the industrialized world, we have the presumption of at-will employment,
okay,
which means that the employer can terminate an employee relationship for any reason, with or without good cause. However, they cannot terminate an employee for an illegal reason, and that's where this whole area of discrimination law comes in.
Okay, so what are the illegal reasons for terminating an employee?
Well, we can start off with what in California is known as the public policy exception, and that's rooted in statutory law, including whistleblowing, anti-retaliation for speaking out against illegal conduct.
Okay, and so let's say that you are an employee and you feel that you have a problem. How do you know whether or not it's a case?
Okay, well, first
call
it
me.
It depends, right.
No, but, you know, I mean, what is there a basic framework that you should be thinking in terms of?
Sure. If you're still employed and you haven't been terminated, then the issue is, are you experiencing any kind of a hostile work environment? What is a hostile work environment? That's where the employer, usually it's a supervisor, is treating the employee unfairly in some way, either by, in many ways, it could be giving them excessive workloads, it could be raising their voice, it could be giving them too many hours to work, it could be giving them false performance evaluations, making them look bad to their peers, et cetera.
And so there, I guess, are many ways that employers can step over the line, if you will. When we look at, say, the current environment and the whole Me Too movement and all of that, very recently, the CEO or the director of the Humane Society was asked to step down because of allegations. In that case, was there some legal reason for them to, you know, basically agree to part ways, or is it just a publicity thing? Why aren't these things going all the way to court, I guess?
Well, first off, I would hope it's not just a publicity thing, because we have to be sensitive to the rights of the accused, so to speak. And there are those who would try to nail people as being harassers for ulterior reasons, perhaps.
Okay.
And we wouldn't want that to happen.
We would hope not, yes.
So there's something called due process, which I advocate in the workplace. Often it's not observed, unfortunately.
Okay. okay, so why don't you take us through maybe an example of a workforce issue that you, or workplace issue that you dealt with and took through the process of due-ness?
Oh, gee, where do I start on that one? There are so many. You have wage and hour claims. You have harassment claims.
So let's look at harassment and the things around, certainly there are people who ask people to keep working after they punched out. There are discrimination type of things. But I think what's going on, or what's timely right now, is the things around harassment and so mistreatment in the office. So can you think of a good example of one of those that maybe you dealt with?
Sure. Well, we all know about sexual harassment. That's that is protected activity. In other words, if someone is a victim of sexual harassment, they can bring a claim based on that, where it has to be either visual or touching or verbal, inappropriate, sexually oriented, although there is a U.S. Supreme Court case that says it doesn't even have to be sexual as long as it's infringes on the employee's, you know, space, so to speak, in a way that's inappropriate and offensive and unwelcome. Okay. That's sexual harassment. Now, there's other types of harassment.
And are there like rules associated with that in terms of, you know, how do you know it's unwelcome? How, you know, do you have to communicate, or is it, you know, zero tolerance? Is it one strike? Is it, how would someone know that this is, it goes beyond, I just didn't like that, to we have a problem here?
Right. Well, that's in the eye of the beholder, as a famous Supreme Court justice once said about pornography: I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. And I think the same could be said about sexual harassment. But so some individuals are more sensitive than others, but there is a line. I like to call it, I preach professionalism in the workplace and proper training of supervisors, making sure that when one goes to work in a given environment, that they're going to be respected and they're there to do a job and to be compensated accordingly for the effort that they put out. But when the hostile work environment interferes with the ability of the employee to do that, it can be very debilitating. It can be draining to their mental situation and so on.
Okay. And So going back to where I was, where we were before that question, is there any example that you'd like to kind of run through of a situation where someone was experiencing something, then they felt that it was over the line, and then decided to contact you, and then what was that process?
Oh, sure. This occurs in many different forms and aspects. For example, recently I had a woman that was an employee of the state of California, one of their departments, who has just been tormented by her supervisor for a number of years now. And this supervisor will assign her impossible jobs. She'll make sure she has to work on days when she wants to take off,
okay,
for personal reasons and the like.
Right.
And she's gone to management and complained about it, and they do nothing.
Oh, okay. So then she did some research or what have you, said enough is enough, and she makes a call. And so did you have to go to court on that one?
Well, actually, on that particular matter, we just recently filed a complaint.
Okay. So you're just in the beginning,
yes,
stages. And so where is the complaint filed?
In Orange County Superior Court.
Oh, so it's essentially like saying, I'm suing you.
That's exactly what we're doing. And I'll tell you why, because I find that there are cases, and we write demand letters. First, I investigate. I want to make sure that I have a case and that my client is credible. And I'm a pretty good judge of that, but because people come and they're shattered emotionally, these people, by what they've experienced.
Well, I guess they've been tormented in a way.
Yes, and nobody's doing anything about it at the office.
Okay.
And they need an advocate in their corner, and that's where I come in, or people who do what I do.
Okay. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll have more of the Importance of Being show, and we're talking about workplace harassment and the legal framework around that. And my guest is Bill Crosby. This is KX93.5.
Once there was this kid who got into an accident and couldn't come to school, but when he finally came back, his hair had turned from black into bright white. He said that it was from when the cousin smashed his heart. This girl who wouldn't go and change with the girls in the change room, and when they finally made her, they saw birthmarks all over her body. She couldn't quite explain it. They'd always just we
And we're back. This is KX93.5. You're listening to the Importance of Being show. We do this show live every Saturday morning from 8 to 9. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman, and today my guest is William Crosby, and he is an attorney that deals with workplace law. And we are talking about harassment in the workplace and hostile workplaces. And you know, Bill, this is really timely because obviously the news has been, there have been many, many, many stories about workplace harassment, specifically sexual harassment. And I think sometimes the media doesn't do a great job of explaining the framework. So a lot of allegations have been made. In many cases, the person has been fired or allowed or asked to resign, and they haven't gone through any formal process in terms of filing a suit or what have you. And so a lot of people have said, well, how come, well, certainly in the past, they didn't respond as quickly. They maybe didn't believe the people or what have you. There's not a whole lot of evidence in some of these situations. So has anything changed legally from, say, the 60s and the Mad Men era to now?
You couldn't be referring to the Anita Hill Clarence Thomas situation, could you?
Certainly that was probably when sexual harassment in the workplace really went public. No, I was thinking of the show Mad Men with the ad agency people back in New York, and it was basically, you know, the three martini lunches and, you know, a secretary is not a toy type of mentality.
Right. Well, sometime in the 70s, I think it was, there was a major class action against one of the big securities firms on behalf of women who had claimed they'd been sexually harassed, and that settled for millions of dollars, and that made big news when that happened.
So that woke some, that changed some perspectives.
Yeah, and then there was the Baker versus McKenzie case up in San Francisco where a legal secretary sued her own law firm.
So when a company does that, or when an accusation is made and the company doesn't respond, then you might get involved as an attorney representing that person and you might file a suit. When they respond preemptively, if you will, why are they doing that as a company?
Well, when you say preemptively, in the sense that they discharge the alleged harasser to do something, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Without having it go all the way through court and having, you know, right, a verdict, if you will.
Well, presumably when that happens, they have good reason to do that because they're going to be subject to suits by the alleged harasser if there's no merit to the allegations. So they have to be careful because they're in
both ways.
Right, because they could be sued for wrongful termination or defamation if they're falsely accusing someone of harassing someone else.
Okay, but then when they do that, so if they don't do anything, are they exposing themselves to liability?
Well, they very well may be if, in fact, the harasser has engaged in inappropriate conduct and crossed the line. And they have good reason to believe that they have, which is generally done after some kind of an investigation, often through an outside consultant that employers will retain.
Okay.
Could be a law firm. It could be a professional consulting firm that does workplace investigations so that they can later say, well, we did an investigation, and this is what they found. So they didn't just shoot from the hip.
Okay. And if they say we're negligent and they didn't do anything, when you sue someone for workplace harassment, are you suing your supervisor or are you suing the company?
Well, there can be harassment by co-employees, not just supervisors.
Okay.
And the rule there is that if an employee is harassed by a co-employee, and the employee doesn't complain about it to management, then management is not liable for the harassment. However, management is strictly liable or always liable for harassment by a supervisor.
Okay.
And the other part of your question is, yes, the supervisor or the co-employee are personally liable for harassment.
Oh, wow.
Unlike discrimination or other types of claims.
Right. So there, I guess, in some cases it can rise to criminality, but it's all, in many cases will be a civil issue, and you can sue the harasser, but you can also sue the company. And what kind of liability or exposure does the company have if they're asleep at the wheel?
Well, again, that's a fact-intensive issue. If they've allowed this to go on previously without disciplining the harasser, then they can be subject to what are called punitive damages. Punitive damages are not to compensate the victim, but to punish the wrongdoer. And in the case of a corporation, that can be a substantial amount because it's based in part on the wealth of the defendant.
Oh. So basically get a percentage of what they get,
right?
What they have.
That's right. I mean, if you're talking, a company that grosses $10 million a year, you know, what's it going to take to make them feel the bite? maybe one-tenth of that and so, do the math, right?
So it's not a $45 parking ticket.
No, it's not.
And so when do you end up going to court? I mean, I would think that, you know, most times they would look at it and say, oh, gosh, they filed a suit, or we've got this letter from this attorney. I think we should make this thing go away now. What happens where it goes all the way?
Okay, well, first off, I try to avoid that if possible, and it depends on the facts of the case, the history of the parties. You know, you read the case through the plaintiff and so on and the story they tell. But so if a demand letter, or sometimes I'll send a draft of a complaint and I'll invite them to give us their response.
Okay.
To make sure that we're on the right ground.
On the same page.
Yes. Because, no, I think a meritless lawsuit should never be filed.
Okay.
Because that just gives a bad name to my profession.
Okay. And when you normally, you know, say your hypothetical case, something happened to me, I come to you, you send something to them, what kinds of responses do you get from them, from the companies?
Usually it's from the company's attorneys.
Okay.
And they investigate the situation. Sometimes they want additional time to do their due diligence before they respond. I always give them the, you know, whatever time they need, as long as it's reasonable and they're not just delaying.
Right, right. Because you're looking for a resolution, not necessarily a lawsuit.
Right. Often there are pre-filing mediations that are held before professional mediators who have experience in employment law. So it just depends on the case. There are other employers that are not going to, they'll say, go take a long walk on a short pier. I'm not interested.
Right. Yeah. We gave it the office.
But I love to tell juries when we get into trial how important the jury system is, because there are righteous lawsuits, believe me. And if we didn't have righteous lawsuits, there would be much more misconduct on the part of corporations, nonprofits, government agencies, you name it. Where human nature exists, you're going to have wrong things done if they're not held accountable.
Yes, yes. And when you, how long do these kinds of trials usually take? So if you get the letter back that says, you know, take a hike, buddy, we don't care, how long does it take to go through this process? I mean, I guess there are variables to that, but on average or in general.
In Orange County, there is a general guideline of judges like to get cases to trial within 1 year.
Okay.
Now, there's always exceptions if you have good reasons why you need more time.
Sure.
Sometimes, or if you have a person who's ill or elderly, you can get preference in trial setting. But you have to have enough time to do your what's called discovery to request the documents, send out the written questions, and take the depositions.
Okay.
And then the defendant usually likes to file what's called a motion for summary judgment to try to get the case thrown out of court. And we have to respond to those.
Your Honor, let's not waste any more time on this. And given that they don't get their motion for summary judgment approved or accepted, you start in about a year. How long does it go about? You know, I mean, are there stages?
Cases get to trial, if they go to trial, within usually 7 to 12 months after filing.
Okay, and then?
But then there are settlement conferences and mediations that are held in almost all cases, where most cases end up settling and not going to trial.
Okay, and so then in the case of one that's gone, maybe that you've gone all the way on, why did it go to trial and what happened?
Well, I can give you one example of an interesting case where we had to excuse 10 jurors before the trial started for cause, because 5 of them said, without hearing any evidence, I cannot give the employer a fair trial, because I think the fact that this woman is sitting there by your side and what she must have gone through to bring this case before a jury, there has to be some truth to it. Then there were 5 others that say,
wait, you're like, oh, that's a keeper. She's one for my side. I've already got one vote in the bank.
No, but if a prospective juror says, Your Honor, I just can't be fair and impartial, then they are excused for cause.
Okay.
And then there were 5 that felt the other way, that said, no, we can't I just don't think these cases belong in court. I don't. These women should take their problems somewhere else. Now they want all this money and blah, blah, blah. So guess how the case turned out. It was a hung jury.
Right.
6-6. They couldn't agree.
And they couldn't agree. So then what happens then?
Well, you can retry the case.
Okay, so you can go back and take another shot at it.
But we settled that after the first trial.
So I guess both sides said, this might go wrong. This might go bad for us. Or we spent a lot of time and no side has won. Perhaps we should take a fresh look at this.
Right. But the thing that I like to preach when I get into trial, and I like to tell jurors this in closing argument, is, you know, we have safer products in this country. We have better designed highways. We have higher standards of medical care. We have more accountability in business transactions and a more humane workplace because of righteous lawsuits and juries. Those are the one thing that companies and employers understand far more than a rap on the knuckles by a government agency. And that's a big money judgment, especially for punitive damages.
Well, I guess, yes, if you get hit in the wallet, you're like, hey, everybody, pay attention to that.
Exactly.
Yeah, you have a newfound focus and emphasis.
That's right. And they're going to start taking stock of how they're doing things. And so that's why, I think we're serving an important function.
Okay. All right. On that note, we're going to take a quick break. This is KX93.5. You're listening to the Importance of Being show. Today, my guest is William Crosby, and we're talking about workplace harassment. Okay, this is KX93.5. We are back with the Importance of Being show. I'm Ernest Hackman. I'm your host. We do this show live every Saturday morning from 8 to 9. And today I have my guest, William Crosby, and we are talking about workplace harassment. You know, most of the show, we've really been talking about the harassment that's been in the news these days and gained a lot of momentum around sexual harassment and the Me Too movement and all of that. But workplace harassment or workplace misconduct is a much broader category of which the sexual aspect is just a small slice. So what other kinds of harassment are there, how do you define it?
Well, I define it generally as workplace bullying, and that's where the boss just out of, you know, ego gratification or sometimes just corruption or maliciousness just makes the subordinate employee's life miserable.
Right.
And that happens. And yet, if it's not based on a protected category, such as age, race, national origin, sex, sexual preference, disability, and the like, or protected activities such as complaining about harassment, if none of those apply, and the boss is just a mean-spirited person who wants to exercise his or her power over the employee, it's a terrible situation. But there's no remedy in the law.
Okay, so no harm, no foul. You guys go back to doing what you were doing.
Well, that's unfortunately the way a lot of employers look at it. Now, I go through my mental checklist, and I'm pretty good at finding some claim that might pass muster in a court of law, and I do my best to assert it, because it's wrong when this sort of thing happens to a good employee who wants nothing other than to be able to work in a professional environment and have to endure this. But it's even worse when they complain about it to the HR department or management, and they do nothing about it, and that happens.
And that's the situation now. So if it's not a protected class, if it's not a protected activity, there's really no legal remedy. What are we going to do?
Okay, well, let me just put a caveat on that. Of course, the employee can file a workers' comp stress claim, although those are hard to prove, and the damages are limited, and the workers' comp system itself has a lot of problems associated with it. I don't like my clients to have to get involved in it unless they have physical injuries. But the real issue is we need a new law to deal with this, and I am advocating such a law. I've written about it, articles that have been published in the LA Daily Journal, for example. I have a resolution that's going to be considered by the Orange County Bar Association Resolutions Committee, and if it passes, will then be submitted to the Conference of Delegates of the State Bar to urge the legislature to pass, in effect, a workplace bullying law that would give someone of the type of person that I just described the same recourse that a victim of sexual harassment would have, for example.
Okay.
And why should there be any difference?
Well, that's a question I'll pose to you.
Well, there shouldn't be any difference, because they're suffering the same indignity, the same mental, the same anxiety, depression. Sometimes these people have to go into the care of mental health practitioners, insomnia, sometimes skin rashes.
Stress-related
right.
disorders, physical disorders, as well as the mental
Right, and this
impacts.
problem is far more prevalent than most people realize.
Really,
and it's a bad testament, and it's just a bad situation, and not a good indication of the state of, our corporate culture in this country, if you will. I really preach that there's no leadership to demand professionalism across the board.
And that would be the ultimate answer.
Yes.
Is that you run a professional workplace.
Right. And I've written on that subject as well, why the CEOs don't get down in the trenches and demand proper training of mid-level managers, for example. Many of them are so pressured to make sales goals and things
sure,
of that nature
results.
That they take it out on the lower level, or they make them scapegoats.
Or they put pressure on them to get to X goal, and sometimes they're unsympathetic.
Oh yeah, and God forbid if you have a work injury or you come down sick, and you can't meet your goals. I've had that. I had a case recently where this gentleman was had cancer. Actually, he had two bouts of cancer,
ooh.
And the boss wouldn't reduce his sales goals. and this sort of thing goes on.
I'm sorry, but it seems absurd, right?
It does.
So you go through, say, a trial, and they lose. What is that boss? What's his reaction to that?
he's not a happy camper.
Well, I'm certainly he's not a happy camper, but is he? Does he feel like it's a travesty of justice? Do they at some point do the lights come on?
Well, there are those individuals and companies who will never get the message, and I've been able to get punitive damage awards against those types of people, and they still will just say this crazy jury. How could they do this to me?
Right. Poor me in my plight.
But what I love to tell, again, jurors, is that this a trial is a search for truth. Everything about a trial, the right to cross-examine witnesses, to object to unreliable evidence, to do discovery, it's all designed to bring about the truth. And the word verdict comes from the Latin word verdictum. That means the truth. And so if someone loses and then they're assessed with punitive damages, which you have to prove by a higher standard, clear and convincing evidence of malice, fraud, or oppression.
Okay, so that's that. So they don't throw out the punitive damages willy-nilly, if you will, or lightly.
No. There has to be good, strong evidence. And then on top of that, the trial judge on a post-trial motion, which they have 60 days, the losing party can bring a motion for a new trial. There are 13 grounds for a new trial under the Code of Civil Procedure. And then beyond that, there's the Court of Appeal. Okay. So every time you read about a verdict, you say, oh, how could a jury award this much? It's always monitored carefully by the trial judge and the Court of Appeal, and there must be a good reason for it.
Okay. And ultimately, those punitive damages are to punish that company for its misconduct, but also to send a message to the broader community.
Yes, that's right. Thank God we have occasional trials. There are those who say we should settle everything. But you need trials to serve as a benchmark for those that conduct settlement conferences too.
Well, and certainly, I guess in the settlement conference, most of that stuff is sealed.
A lot of times it is. They insist on confidentiality, right?
And so you wouldn't have any kind of framework for people to understand the law if everything's settled.
Exactly, and on top of that, I think the jury service. You talk to most jurors who have been in a civil trial or a criminal trial for that matter, and they come away, feel like they've been, their life experience has been enhanced by the process.
Okay. So like a civics lesson, if you will.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. All right. Well, if someone believes they're having a workplace harassment, bullying problem, what do they do? What's their recourse? Where do they go?
Well, first off, they should make a complaint to HR because the company will always say, why didn't you complain? And,
right.
And in their handbook, they always have ways in which you're supposed to complain. Now, the fact is, a lot of times, employees feel intimidated and fearful that if they complain, then they're going to be retaliated against.
Right.
Because of the culture that's been perpetrated by the employer.
But that's protected as well.
Yes.
So one of those protected activities you were mentioning, right?
That's right. But that still doesn't prevent, for example, and you find that women tend to be, whether it's sexual or not, they're more vulnerable in general. I would say over all the years I've done employment cases, probably 70% of my clients have been female. Now, what does that tell you? And also Hispanics and minorities are also.
So it's a power thing, basically.
It is a power thing, exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the air and talking about workplace harassment.
And the other side of that is workplace fairness, which is what I advocate.
All right, everybody. Go forth and be fair. This is KX93.5. You've been listening to the Importance of Being show. And coming up next is Rainbow Radio. And I hope you have a great Saturday. Thanks for listening.